Yeah, all right. I'm Dirk Wood. I'm the VP of Marketing. Before we get started, I want to introduce everybody up here, most of whom you probably already know. But on my right here, we have the Senior Editor of Special Projects and Grand Poobah of all books. And he likes big books. He cannot lie. This is going to be here. Oscar-winning, Emmy-winning, Eisner-winning, Harvey-winning, legendary Darwin Cook. And this right here is a man who keeps all the trains moving on time in our company and keeps the books coming to you guys and deals with every licensor under the sun. This is our president and COO, Mr. Greg Goldstein. Next to him, we have writer, editor, KISS fan, the greatest editor-in-chief, and chief creative officer in comics, Chris Ryle. We are not in town to mess around, as they say. We have some of the most ridiculous announcements of this show, and which we'll prove to you in a matter of moments. But so let's get started, right? At the end of this, we're going to hopefully have time for some Q&A, but we're going to have some special guests, and we're all a little bit talkative up here, so we'll do our best to keep it short. But, all right, let's get started with the first thing, right?
Do it.
Parker. Okay.
Sure. As you know, we've been doing the Parker graphic novel series based on Richard Stark's classic crime novels. Darwin is actually one for three books and a collection, five Eisner Awards, which is pretty astounding. We have a fourth book that will be coming out in December, which is Slayground. And we also have a couple of pages from that book, if you want to go to the next slide. And Darwin, you want to talk about Slayground a little?
Sure. It should be pretty obvious I loved Parker. And one of my favorite books out of the run is Slayground, and I'm not really going to spoil it for people who will end up picking it up and reading it, but it's probably the greatest book in regards to showing you just the pure essence of who Parker is and the way he thinks and the way he operates. And without giving away too much, what happens is an armored car robbery gets botched in the dead of winter, and it's snowing, and he's in the middle of nowhere in a city he doesn't know very well. And he gets away with the money on foot, and he can hear the sirens closing in, and he sees an abandoned amusement park. And as he's going over the gate of this boarded up park, he sees two policemen and two well-dressed Italian men standing out on the street, and they're passing an envelope between them. And their eyes lock as Parker goes over the fence. And then the police radio tells the cops that about the armored car robbery, and they were there getting paid off by the mob. And so what they do is they radio in that the guy got away, and they decide they're going to go into the park to get the money for themselves. And what follows after that is just, you know, I think one of the most incredible books I've ever read. So this was always very important to me. Like, if we were going to do Parker, this book had to get done. And I don't know why, but I got nervous this year, and I bumped the order. I said, we should do Slayground now in case something happens. I want to make sure we get this book done. It's a little shorter than the others. Because the story was so trimmed down, I decided to cut it right down to the bone and keep it really clean. But it's a lot cheaper price point as well. I don't know how these guys got the price they got for the book we produced.
Took them out of your royalties.
Yeah, okay.
So I also gave an envelope to the printer.
All right, see? I'm paying for your blood a little bit. And there's also, because it was a slightly shorter tale, we've also included a short story I did called The Seventh, which up till now it's only appeared in the Martine edition. So if you were going to try this guy out, if you haven't tried Parker yet, try it here. This is a great entry-level book, and you just see the guy at his very, very best.
And actually, if I can add something, that story, The Seventh, when I mentioned those five Eisner Awards, that won Best Short Story of the Year a couple years ago. It's a phenomenal book. And it's in the same format as the other books, even though it is a little bit shorter. And now, while you know we're happy to talk about Slayground, it's coming out in December, but it's something we've already announced, and this is sort of the all-new announcement panel. So there's another reason that Darwin's up here, and that is, if you guys are familiar with some of these old paperback covers, they're pretty rare. These are the original printings of the first six Parker novels by Richard Stark. And we are very happy to announce here at the show that Darwin, why don't you talk?
We're printing the novels. One of the things about a lot of the great crime fiction produced in America back in the mid-century was most of it was done for the paperback market. So these books never had a hardcover treatment. They came out as paperback originals. Much later in the series, they started doing them as hardcovers, but this will be the first time that the original run of books are all going to be published in a hardcover format. You know, I'm going to be designing the books, and they'll include 10 full-color illustration plates, just like an old-school book. I don't know if you remember, when I was a kid, I had a copy of Treasure Island, and it had those wonderful paintings in the book. So, you know, for me, this is like a dream project to finally see all of the Parker books printed, you know, with the care and the beauty they deserve, and the opportunity to take another swing at the character, because there'll be full color illustrations. I plan on a completely different approach, and it's been kind of fun to go back to a book I've done as a graphic novel, and now to be illustrating the actual novel. So this is very exciting for me, and I think it's just a great chance to make sure that this work is preserved and properly presented. And again, if you've enjoyed the graphic novels and you've never read a Parker novel, then get off your ass and read one, because they are amazing. And we're going to do everything we can to seduce and entice you into reading books with paper pages. So
I don't know.
Well, I know it's a crazy idea, but let's give it a try.
And the first one will be coming out sometime in the second quarter of next year. And then the rest of the schedule will be determined. And the novels will be released chronologically, of course. And as Darwin said, he's doing all the design and illustrations and, you know, an appropriately different style. Now, our next announcement is an artist edition announcement. One thing that people have been asking about since we started the artist edition line is, why not do any comic strips? And so we gave it a lot of thought, and we thought, what would be the best comic strip to start with? And we thought about it, and Ted Adams worked very hard to make this happen, and I'm sure you, Greg, had a hand in it too. But if you go to the next slide, we are doing Peanuts by Charles Schulz. And this will, of course, be a horizontal artist edition. You know, we are working very closely with the Peanuts people, the Peanuts Museum. You know, they have an archive of approximately 7,000 originals, and so we have our pick of them. And
can I ask you a question?
Of course, you can ask me a question.
You might not know the answer. Why is it called Peanuts?
That was a syndicate thing. Charles Schulz hated the name.
Did he really?
Yeah, he had another name for it, and they went with Peanuts. And I guess he said he grew to be okay with it, but never wanted it.
Huh. didn't know that.
Yeah, it did. I never understood why it was called Peanuts.
Well, the first, he did another strip that was called Peanuts, Little Folks, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And Scott, I'm just going to add, if I can, I want to quash the rumor that IKEA is secretly paying us off to create different formats of artist editions so that you guys all have to go out by strange size bookcases and store them. That is not true. I don't know where that rumor started.
Speak for yourself.
I got my IKEA check right here.
The next couple of announcements are something that people have really been asking us about. One particular artist in particular, but well, I think both of them are pretty exciting. And not only did you want to lead into this, or
sure,
okay. And actually, Mr. Goldstein will be happy to talk about this.
All right. So we've got the logo slide. All right. So many of you know we have a long-term relationship with DC Comics. We've published a number of different books under the Artist Edition series. Mad, Spirit, and now Tor, which will be available in a few weeks, all come through our relationship with DC. We started our very ambitious Library of American Comics program with DC to reprint Superman, Batman, and even the very rare Wonder Woman strips from the 40s. So this is pretty exciting stuff to expand our relationship with DC, and in honor of the fact that DC is the home of Superman, and in honor of the fact that I'm a former newspaper person, I figured I'd just go all Clark Kent on you.
Stand up.
And here you go. And everyone at this company, up here and everyone at the office, will fight to the mic to tell you how friggin' excited we are to be publishing Jack Kirby in Artist Edition.
And
take it away, Scott.
What I would say is Jack Kirby, to me, is the most important comic artist of all time. You know, I mean, no disrespect to any other comic artist.
How is that supposed to make me feel? I'm right here. Sorry, Gar.
You're the second best. No, not yet. Okay. I'll just say there are like 300 other guys that are tied for second. There's so many
great guys. Very diplomatic, Scott.
Third. Darwin's right here.
There's an old joke that Gil Kane used to tell. If somebody would ask him who his favorite inker was. Actually, no. Well, he would say that his second favorite inker was Vinnie Coletto. And said it was first.
Well, everybody else
dies for first. Jack Kirby is a personally a guy that was very kind to me when I was younger, and had a big influence on me and the way I learned to look at comics. And so I'm very happy to announce that we are going to be doing Jack Kirby's New Gods. Woo! And right now, we have 5 issues and some cool extras, some pencil pieces, and some unpublished stuff. It's going to be a phenomenal book. And as always, I look around and I see what I can get. I mean, literally, sometimes these books literally are changed the day before they go to the printer if I find something else, much to Greg and Ted's chagrin. But and here's a couple of pieces by Mr. Kirby, the cover to New Gods number 2 on the left, and a page from number 6. We'll be putting in issues 2, 5, 6, 7, and 8, which are pretty prime time Jack Kirby stuff.
Fantastic. Those are our special guests.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Let me look. I got this thing memorized. All right.
I just do that Seinfeld thing with the books. I screw legs onto them. I'm using the Wally Wood as a coffee table now.
All right. Now, before we go to the next slide, the announcement for this panel said that we had a a legendary guest. That's actually...
a lie.
It's actually a lie. It's a lie. We have two legendary guests. And the first legendary guest that we have here, in a moment, will tell you... He will announce the next DC Artist Edition that we're doing. And so I would like to introduce...
Hello, America. This is Dave Gibbons. I'm really sorry that I can't be at New York Comic Con this weekend. It's a great show and it's in a great town. But I've got an announcement that I want to make. So by the magic of the interwebs, I'm appearing for you thus. Now, first of all, a bit of history. Way, way back when, I broke into the comics industry by doing a balloon management, which was a lot of work, but it meant that every week I would get a bonded original artwork that I could start as I was lecturing. And that was really how I learned to draw comics, to see the scale of the original, to see what the artist had done, brush, pen, where it made mistakes, where it corrected stuff, where it improved stuff. And it really was very important to me. All these years later, you know, I've drawn hundreds, thousands of comic book pages myself, but I still love to look at original art. I find you can learn so much from it, and it really does, you know, deepen the appreciation that you can have for the business of producing comic art. Now, amongst these thousands of pages I've drawn, there's one particular series that has achieved a fame and a currency far beyond anything that we ever imagined when we were producing it. And a little light bulb went on over my head, and I kind of connected two things together. And so I made a suggestion to Scott Dunbier about this particular series, which he was very, very enthusiastic about, and of course reports over DC Comics. And, well, I don't know, by now, some of you might have realised where I'm going with this announcement. Just one more clue.
We love the t-shirt thing.
Yeah. What I'm here to announce is that in 2014, IDW will be publishing the artist edition of Watchmen. It'll be photographed in full colour, and it'll be high resolution. It won't actually contain complete stories because these are now being scattered to the four corners of the world, and the people who have them hold on to them very, very tightly. But there will be extended sequences, there will be covers, there will be all sorts of illustrations and oddities, and really it will be the next best thing to having the original artwork in your hands. It'll also be about $1 million cheaper than the original prices. Herm indeed. Anyway, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of the convention. This is Dave Gibbons saying goodbye, America.
And not the final cover, but that's a work in progress. If we go to the next slide, see. You know, there are so many great images in the series. You know, it's been called the greatest graphic novel of all time. You know, probably deservedly so.
I'm right here.
You know, after New Frontier,
here.
Someone's going to tweet that.
I didn't publish that one.
You think we're serious?
Yeah, I know. No. Scott Dunbier says. All right. So I'm a DC kid. You know, I mean, there were Marvel kids and DC kids. I grew up, you know, in 1972, I was 9 years old, and to be able to do Jack Kirby's New Gods, and also Watchmen, you know, just two seminal works, two amazing pieces of comic history, is, you know, truly a privilege. And we do have some other DC artist editions in the works. We're not going to announce them here, but I promise you they'll be good ones. And you know, hopefully we'll have a long-standing relationship with them. Now,
wait, real quick on this. So if you saw on the cover, it said Artifact Edition. And what that means is what Dave said. That's allowing us to, you know, Scott's gotten a lot of pages, but doesn't necessarily have enough complete stories to do books on everything that we have. So we've created this sort of adjunct line called Artifact Editions, which will be, like Dave mentioned, extended sequences, covers, miscellaneous things, but not necessarily full stories all the way through, which will now allow us to do a lot of other material where a lot of the other pages have been scattered, but we've got enough to do, you know, nice art books.
And, you know, we have some other Artifact Editions in the works, too, that'll be coming down the line. Now, I did say that we had two legendary guests, and now, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce the second legendary guest. Let me turn that down a little bit. Mr. Jim Steranko. Say no offense to Darwin. Jim Steranko is literally a living legend.
How hard is it?
Very good.
Make yourself at home.
Got your own mic.
Hey, thank you so much. How are you guys?
Now, as a comics fan, you know, Jim Steranko is obviously one of the true greats of comic history. You know, he did a very small body of work for Marvel Comics comparatively, but it really has stood the test of time as being something that people look to again and again as a benchmark in comics history. You know, he was very, and still is to this day, a very innovative artist, a very powerful artist. And so we are very happy to announce that we are going to be publishing the Steranko Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. book.
Really?
It's Marvel Comics.
You announced.
Now, I think we'll show the next slide, and then I'd like to actually go on a little bit, and then we'll have Jim talk. Here are a couple of pages from his run on Strange Tales. Now, the interesting thing about Jim's run on Strange Tales is, aside from it just being tremendous work, are you guys familiar if you've seen artist editions, you know some are larger and some are smaller, right? There are the small ones are 11 by 17. The large ones are 15 by 22. Now, about two-thirds of the way through Jim's run on Strange Tales, the art actually went to the smaller size, 1.5 times up. So the Steranko Strange Tales book, Nick Fury's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. book, will be a 15 by 22 inch book, and it will collect the first 12 stories that he drew in Strange Tales 151 to 162. Now, Jim did do some other work, and we will also be publishing the Steranko Nick Fury and Captain America stories. And these will collect the smaller size Strange Tales stories, the Nick Fury stories, as well as, right now, at least 3 issues of the Nick Fury out of the 4 that he did, plus covers, and his Captain America issues.
All of it?
Pretty much. We are missing some pages, but we have the vast majority of them. And we have all the Captain America covers. We have almost all of the Nick Fury covers. We're missing one right now. And we're also going to put in, you know, other great stuff like the romance story that Jim did, which is, if you guys are familiar with it, you know, just phenomenal, phenomenal work. And to be able to see it in black and white is very exciting. It was for me when I saw the originals. And then if we go to the next slide, and a couple of examples of Captain America on the left and the cover to Nick Fury, number four, on the right. And now I would like to turn over the mic to Mr. Jim Steranko.
I'm speechless.
I don't believe that.
You know, Scott was absolutely right. I probably have the distinction of producing the smallest amount of work that made the most amount of noise in this business. You know Robert Johnson, you know that blues musician? 29 recordings. That's how many comic books I did. 29. So I was 29 books and sold my soul to Stan Lee. You figure it out. You know, what an interesting thing to have produced work. And I always just thought of myself as an entertainer. That's what I set out to do with my books. A writer, an artist, but really just an entertainer. And I always found it to be profoundly interesting that for the past, whatever it's been, 35 or 40 years, my books have always been in print. I don't get it, but I'm very grateful for it. And now the ultimate editions are, you know, looming before us. In a way, it's kind of painful for me because as an artist, I'm inclined to see all the mistakes that I've made along the way. But fortunately, there's a few people out there who see something else beyond that. I guess that's a good thing. So, what do those books do?
The first book will be coming out in May. So the second one's still to be determined.
Well, good. Can I tell a little story that is kind of only remotely connected with those books?
No, please do.
Maybe 5 years ago, this is a tragic little story, but it may have a happy ending, so bear with me. Maybe about 5 years ago, I really got this Jones to get back into the storytelling business. And you know, I've been doing comic book covers and related things for a long time. No stories. And I had an idea for Captain America. And over the summer, this thing grew, and finally, I remember I called Dan Buckley. You know this guy? He's at the top of Marvel. And I said, would you be interested in having me return to comics? And he said, that would be big news. And I said, well, suppose I came back with one of my old characters, Captain America. It's always been my favorite superhero. And he said, that would be really big news. That would be cover news. And I said, suppose I came back with not only Captain America, but a new comics format that had never been done before. Now, if you know anything about my work, you know that I've always been interested in breaking new ground and pushing the limits of comics. I did it with... Have any of you seen that 400th issue of Superman?
Yes.
I went to 10 pages in there, new format. I did it with Outland, graphic novel. I did it with Red Tide, my hard-boiled Chandler story. And I thought we could do it again. And this is what I believe in. And this is what really interests me. I find it tough going to sublimate real ideas. And I'm not talking about things that happen in panels, but I'm talking about the form of comics itself. You understand? I think we've just been chewing on the tip of the damn iceberg for years. Comics format has stayed exactly the same as it was back in 1930. It's like 80, 90 years ago. Unbelievable. Still the same. But I'm telling you,
that there are 1,000 new formats that you can enjoy comics with. I've got some of them up here, and I like to create them. I like to produce them, to generate them, because I think they're important for the development of the form. So I mentioned this to Buckley. I said, I've got not only new Captain America ideas, but a new format. And I remember an incident that happened maybe 3 or 4 years before that, when Joe Quesada was handling Marvel Line. I pitched a 6-issue S.H.I.E.L.D. miniseries to Joe in comic format. And he made me generate an outline for each of the 6 books, which I thought was excessive for me because he was already familiar with my work. Why the hell did I have to do it? I had to audition, for God's sake. And he said, no, that's the way it's done. So I gave him the outline, and subsequently he said, there's one thing in here that violates the Marvel Universe, so we can't do it. You know, there's one little trick, one little turn that violated the Marvel Universe, so it doesn't work. And then, 6 months later, Joe threw away the whole damn Marvel Universe and started from scratch, so I'm wondering, you know, how far off could I possibly be? So I'm still smarting a little bit, but I understand Joe's position. That's not really a criticism. I mean, he was the guy with all the shots there. So I'm discussing this return to comic storytelling, to real stories with Buckley, and coming back with Captain America, and a new format, and one collectively that would not violate any in the Marvel Universe. As a matter of fact, it would give them material to use for the next 10 years. They could pluck it, exploit it for a long time. And Dan called me one day and he said, we have to suspend negotiations for just a moment. He said, San Diego's coming up, so if you could give me like a week or two, something like that, you know, I'm really busy. And I said, sure, why not? We're right here. And San Diego came and went. I didn't hear it from Dan again. And then I got an email from someone I never heard of before, somebody at Marvel. And he said this to me, your ideas won't work. He didn't tell me why they wouldn't work. He just said they wouldn't work. Well, nice guy that I am, I never even responded to honor his call. I don't know who the hell it was, and I didn't really care. I thought that was the end. It was the end of my negotiation with one of them. Then about a year or so later, I made a pitch to Dan DiDio in DC to do a Batman line. And I thought that would be right for me because I'm very comfortable with darkness. And that character is very close to my heart, so I thought I could do something with him. And DiDio said, no. No, we're not interested because we're already selling Batman through the roof. We don't need you there. We need you maybe somewhere else, but not with Batman. Well, I thought about this for a while, and then I had an idea for Superman. You know, this is a very difficult thing to do. When a character has existed for years and years, how many decades, like 75 years, prolifically, there's damn little that's left to do. The characters are essentially worn out. I had a new idea, a new concept, and I pitched it to him. It was at San Diego Con. But I also wanted to do a new format, still thinking about this line. So a new take on Superman, and he liked that. And he said, can you give us something that we can pick for the next 10 or 20 years, pick it apart, pick these ideas, make it rich, like Kirby did with his New World books. And he could see that the seeds were there to do it. And I said, I think I can handle that. Then he said one thing. He said, I only understand comic book pages. That is, you know, six panels to a page, five or six, you know what I mean? Standard comic book format pages. And I said, I've already done that. I'm not interested in going there. I want to break a new ground. I want to show you what hasn't been done before. There's a world, a universe. It's really exciting you need to tap into. And he said, I can't do it. All I know about is comic book pages. Thank you. Goodbye.
You're making me sad.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's okay.
Wait till the happy ending here, Jim.
It's gone. And I've done a number of other things since then. And some comic book work here and there. But I want to tell you about a phone call that I made on Monday. That is this very Monday. This is company, IDW. They take risks. You know, it's good to be commercially safe and, you know, make every moment, every penny, every damn dollar count. But there's also something to say about the art of the form and moving ahead, doing something that's really new, breaking ground. You know, that's to me, that's the most exciting place to be. The edge. Love being on the edge. And if it fails, I don't really care. What's the most important thing is that I did my best. And if my best fails, I can't do any more than that. It's as simple as that. Now, I remember experiments that I did with the S.H.I.E.L.D. books and the Captain America books. Fighting would stand for every damn last innovation. And, you know, Stanton's a sweet guy. I had a confrontational relationship with him. He didn't have one with me. But I had to fight to bring you things like, remember that four-page climax for that nine-month story in the Strange Tales books? Remember that? The fight like hell to get that done. And many of the others. So anyway, I made this call on Monday. To my friend Greg. And I had a 3-minute pitch for a set of brand new ideas, something that's never been done before, and something I think you'd like very much, and something I'd love to do. I mean, this is burning a hole in my creative heart. And I said, you know, I need maybe 3 minutes of your time. I began to tell him about it. And after a minute and a half, he said, I've heard enough. We'll do it. Get my message. Now you know why I'm here.
That's why I'm here, too.
All right, well, thank you very much, Jim. All right, and now we're going to go into...
So one last part of that story was that we all want to say thank you to Dan Buckley at Marvel and to Dan DiDio in DC for letting us do
that.
Partners at Marvel and DC. All right, and now we're coming to the question and answer portion of our program.
That is correct. And so now we've got obviously ourselves up here and the amazing Mr. Jim Steranko and Darwin Cook. You can ask us questions about any of the things we've just talked about, anything else. If you're, for example, a Transformers fan, just saying. We can also speak to those things as well, so we do have a little bit of time.
Which Transformer are you?
Swerve.
Who?
Swerve.
Of course. I don't know.
You look great.
Can I start it off before we get going?
Absolutely.
I just want to know, Darwin, what is your favorite Parker novel? Do you have a...
It's probably a toss-up. In terms of just my visceral favorite... Probably Slayground.
Yeah, Joe Hill's too.
Probably the most masterfully constructed is the score. Very audacious and exciting book. But the one true masterpiece in the run is Butcher's Moon, the last of the original books he did. It's a remarkable, you know, I'll call it literature. I'm not an educated man, but yeah, that book is just magnificent.
Well, I love that we're doing these, because the one thing I've heard a lot of from people at conventions and email and whatnot is they go, man, I love these books, and it's made me want to read the novels, but then they don't find the novels. So now everybody will be able to easily find the novels in very nice formats.
Yeah, it's my entire relationship with Richard Stark when I was young was like scouring the secondhand bookstores, and you know, once every 6-8 months you'd find one of them, you know, and you'd have this dog-eared copy that we'd all pass around. So it's going to be wonderful to give Don Westlake and Richard Stark, you know, a library edition that's long overdue. And yeah, I'm going to be very proud to be able to do this for Don and Don's family and for the fans of the character.
Darwin, now that you've moved on.
Nobody does it better, either.
That's right. Oh. Now that you've moved on to illustrating literature, are you just done with the graphic novels?
Oh, man, you know, I am getting old. But
no, he's not.
No, I mean, if Jim's still doing it, I got a few years left in me.
There you go. All right, let's take some questions from the crowd here. Yes, young man. You were the first person here, so you get the first question.
I'm a fan of your comics line. How can young people like me submit artwork to hopefully get a job with you guys?
Submissions? Chris, you want to take that?
Yeah, well, we got a submissions link at our website, and we're going to actually be expanding the policy to, you know, extend to pitches and whatnot, too. So hit the website, and, you know, happy to see what you got.
If I can.
Chris.
Yeah.
Hang on. I was going to give you a tip. When you send it in, staple a $100 bill to the top of the pile. You'll move to the top of the pile.
I think this gentleman over here.
No, no tattoos.
I gotta say, I could ask a brilliant Parker question, so I'll try to limit it to just two. Making Slayground, is that kind of like a F-mention that you will be going through at some point? And the other one is, are we ever going to see a panel of the phone ringing in Parker's garage?
And Parker in the garage?
Yeah, that line where the phone rang, Parker was in the garage, killing man. Maybe
We've actually talked about doing an artist portfolio called Killer Lines and just taking the first line of every book to illustrate, because it's remarkable.
Actually, would you guys like to see a portfolio like that?
Yeah. Fair enough to do. And Butcher's Moon, yeah, well, of course, we're setting up for it. I tweaked the story in one tiny regard to make the connection clearer and more emotionally charged. And you'll pick that up when you read it.
Before you take the next question, the gentleman that asked the first question, he's on his phone now, you want to know, Jim? Find me out after the panel, I'll give you a better detailed description on how you can do submissions.
Thank you.
What a guy.
Let's see. Ooh, how about that young guy?
Go
there?
Pony.
Yeah.
Pony.
Not a mine. A boat mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll take the first stab at that. A company like IDW is always looking at new properties to add. I would like to either buy one of my competitors potentially, or maybe ask one to go away, and that would get us an expanded library. Just trying to take the heat off of Jim here with these kinds of comments. But obviously we're always looking to expand the library, just keep growing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with everything we do, it always starts with, do we like it? You know, is this something we want to live with for 3 or 5 years? Because you don't do these things and then they go away. So it's got to be something you really like, or otherwise it ends up feeling like work. So we have a big wish list of stuff that, you know, are fan favorites of ours. And I mean, if anybody's ever talked to me at a convention, you can probably get a quick sense of mine from Space Knights and others. But, yeah, I mean, we're always looking for a new, old, good. Good is usually the driving force, so...
Yeah, Chris is right. I mean, when we take these things on, we don't, you know, do them half-assed generally. Like, we just did X,
generally.
And that's been a... No, we just did X-Files. It's been this huge success, so we're going to live with this thing. We're going to work on it. We're not just going to jump out and grab something in a passive way.
All right. Last thing. Are you planning to do any extreme Ghostbuster short stories?
No. I think we're content doing what we're doing right now. And
if you send an email to the editor, Tom Waltz, he probably...
Was he clapping that we're not doing it?
Wait, I'm
Extreme Ghostbusters here at Hereford, sir.
Cool, thanks.
All right,
thanks.
All right.
Now, how about that young man right there? Can you speak up a little bit, sir?
I'm sorry, to what?
I can't hear you.
Cartoon Network, I think.
Yeah. Always a chance. Yeah, I mean, I think at this point we're content with the properties that we have from them. And but like we say to both of you, I mean, we're certainly always looking at good new things.
All right. How about you, sir?
Yeah. Next year is the 30th anniversary of the Ninja Turtles.
That's correct.
Are there plans?
Are there plans?
Are there plans?
They are as yet unannounced plans. Yes.
But you know.
Just for him, goes away extended Ninja Turtles thing, right?
I'll take his laughter.
But if you want to take it further, next year is also the anniversary of Ghostbusters. It's an anniversary of Transformers. It's an anniversary of G.I. Joe. There are plans.
You know what? I really think we should announce the big plan here. You know, don't you think, Chris? Darwin Cook is actually doing a Parker Turtles crossover.
Next year is also the 15th anniversary of IDW.
When the phone rang, Parker was doing the service. Pointing the gun at Scott Beaver's head.
Right? Let's get
somebody to come back. Some of them got that.
How about the Riddler?
What is the future of My Little Pony comics? We're going to continue with the ongoing series. We're actually launching a second ongoing series called Friends Forever. And yeah, I mean, the property's off to a wonderful first year. We've sold over 1 million copies, so I mean, obviously you guys really like what we're doing. Thank you. And yeah, we're going to keep doing a lot more.
All right, Scott wants to do the next one.
All right, that gentleman with the hat. You, not looking, not behind you, you.
Baseball.
Donald, what do you mind doing for your adoption process? How do you go from the regular pace to
the regular? That's a
great question. It's a pretty simple process that just takes an incredibly long time. First off, the novels are so tersely, succinctly written that it's kind of been pre-edited. Generally, with something like a novel, for a film or a comic, you would have to radically edit it down in order, to... But Stark's prose is so lean, it's pretty well cut down right there. The trick with Parker and the challenge I give myself every time I do one of these is to avoid using narrative unless we're looking at somebody's emotional state of mind. If it's the narrative is describing physical action, I don't want it in the book. And so the challenge becomes, how can I make this evocative and exciting but clear enough that you can see exactly what's going on? And like Slayground's a great example, because he spends a third of the book alone in the park booby-trapping it before these guys get in there. And so you have to very precise things have to be illustrated very clearly in order to avoid the narrative. So that's kind of the process I go down. And the other thing, this is true of anything I do, usually if I'm sitting at the table and I'm getting bored of drawing it, that means the sequence is too long. If I'm bored by the time I hit page 7 in the sequence, that means I've made a mistake. So I will usually go back and rework things there. So I spend maybe 4 or 5 months just with that novel in my bag wherever I go. And I read snatches of it when I've got free time, and I make my notes. And I let it evolve in my head. And then when I sit down, I, just go at it.
Depression.
The gentleman with his hand up behind the man with the hat. You.
The man behind the man with the hat. That's actually a Parker novel.
quick question first. Really love John Rogers' ongoing D&D comic. Are there any plans for that to resume?
Yeah, sadly the ongoing stopped. But we're talking to him about doing more. He got really busy with Leverage, the TV show. So we're talking about more. No announcement yet, but it's certainly a discussion point.
Well, you are not the only person that feels that way about that particular series, so we do talk about that.
I think we have 10 minutes, so we'll try and get through as many as we can here.
All right.
Chris, so front row.
What would you guys consider as your most popular and or highest selling work?
Well, highest selling is an easy number to quantify, but most popular, I think, will vary wildly between the person you ask. I would imagine Transformers is probably more popular for you than some other things we do. Lock and Key has an amazing following. I mean, Darwin's books have an incredibly passionate and huge following. Jim's book is going to be an amazing thing. So the great thing about it is that we do so many different and diverse things that whatever your taste, you can find a favorite with what we do.
Hey, you know, just to echo what Jim said earlier, it is so remarkable to be working with a company and with people who trust you. And you can phone up with an idea or a concept, and you're not shunted off into this netherworld for 8 months or a year and a half. Or when I did New Frontier, it took 4 years just to get them to approve it. Okay? There are movies getting made in less time. It took those people 4 years to approve a ridiculously simple Justice League story.
What Darwin means is we would like to thank Dan DiDio and
when Scott got to IEW, the circumstances in which how he got there I won't get into, but we were already very embroiled together. And as soon as they plugged his phone in, he called me and he said, "So what are you going to do for us?" And I said, "This is what I want to do, this Parker thing. Get the rights to these novels, and you've got me for at least 4 books. 2 weeks later, it was done. It was a done deal. We were working, you know, and that's, it's great to be in that kind of environment.
I'd like to also thank DC Comics for Scott Doombeer.
Yes.
let me amplify what the guy was saying. You know, we have the advantage of being a smaller company, but culturally, I think the way IW was founded 15 years ago, coming up, as you heard earlier, Ted Adams and his partners, the way that company was founded was, let's not do what everybody else is doing. Let's try to do things that, you know, will get us noticed and will get us recognized. Because obviously nothing would have gone south faster than just another Me Too company. There are plenty of good companies doing conventional product, using sort of the conventional process of greenlighting projects and going through the projects. But we, culturally, that's Chris, myself, Ted, Scott, Dirk, the entire organization, we think like, okay, what's the reason not to do this? Let's try it. And not, of course, I mean, honestly, you could look, not everything works, but we'll just continue. We'll continue and we'll be smart about it. We're not exactly going to bet the entire company on some of these things, but we're going to keep looking at new ideas and new concepts, and particularly with those great established creators that are looking to expand their horizons.
Well, we also, I think it goes both ways. We also have maybe a knack for picking creators that do outstanding work, like Darwin, Jim, Joe Hill, that also happen to be great guys and easy to work with. You know, so.
That depends on who you ask. I was at the party last night. I'm like the most difficult asshole in the world.
Maybe there's still like 10 minutes left in this panel. We'll give you 5 minutes left. Okay, how about the man in the underwear?
I would love to do a Turtles Daredevil thing that was, you know, that played up to Frank Miller Daredevil the way the Turtles, you know, did at their origins. I mean, use the source material that they were inspired by and just have a fun story there.
Thank you.
and that's also Kevin Eastman's dream project.
Yeah, right? Sure.
How about you in the blue shirt back there?
Now that Lock and Key is finishing up, are you planning to do any more with Joe Hill or Lucas?
Clearly. rest you want to talk about?
Not together yet. I mean, once Lock and Key ends, they're going to take a small break. Joe's doing a new book in November called Wraith that spins out of his novel from last year, Nosferatu. So he's doing that with an artist named Charles Paul Wilson III. And then he and Gabe are going to do more Lock and Key down the line. But first Joe's doing this, finishing a couple novels. But we will always do Lock and Key with those guys.
And I love Final 14.
Oh,
hey.
Thank you.
I know what you mean.
And Gabe's going to be illustrating a little Nemo story coming up as well for us with Eric Chanel, so that's going to be great.
A miniseries.
Miniseries. There you go.
Yeah.
You.
I just want to say that I really
We started with four, and now it's just an open thing. We'll do them until I can't or I'm sick of it. There might be a point where I take a few years break.
A few years?
Well, you never know. You know, by the sixth book, I might want to try, you know, something different for a little while.
For AEW.
Yeah. Well. Wow. You guys can't see it, but there's a chain on my ankle. That's my wife back there, and the guy sitting beside her has a gun. I think that I'm always going to be associated with this character now. And I feel like it's maybe my responsibility at this point to keep, you know, for my money, the greatest crime writer, you know, America ever produced, to keep the work in front of people. And it's just good to know, like, it's keeping it out there, and that's good for his family, it's good for his children, it's good for his wife, and I think it's good for people who like to read great stuff. So, one way or another, and actually, now this I can't spoil at all, but there are other ways I think you're going to see us and Parker moving forward over the next couple of years that'll just blow your mind if we can get it off the ground. So. Yeah, so it's a long-term commitment.
And thank you for the kind thoughts about IDW as well. A couple more questions at least. How about a gentleman in the green shirt?
Thanks. You guys have had a great relationship with John Byrne over the last few years. He continues to put out great material like Terms and Feelings is coming out. So I guess two quick ones. One, what can we look forward to next year? And two, does the Artifact edition fit nicely with his previous work on X-Men?
Good questions, both. And I can't answer either one specifically at this point, but I was in Connecticut having dinner with John last night, plotting out his next couple of years with us, so there's a lot more in that regard, and we talked about some of his past work and potential new additions of that, so that's about as specific as I can get at this point.
We can say, I don't know if you've noticed the Star Trek annual he's doing, does that ring a bell? Yeah, he's doing the sort of a tribute to the old photo novels that if you guys haven't seen it, I'll actually be talking about that a little bit on a panel on Sunday, but I'll plug that at the end. But it's a little atypical for John, but a cool project. Yeah,
again, another sort of breakout idea.
Yeah.
Go with red hair and then purple hair. Big discussions going on. We wanted to start with the three that we thought, you know, the most people were familiar with in Powerpuff Girls and Samurai Jack and Ben 10. But, you know, Ben 10 was created by the same guys that created Generator Rex. There are conversations being had for next year. So I think hopefully we'll give you more Tears of Joy next year. And then...
The question was also Generator Rex.
Okay.
Really love to see that
card. Noted. Thanks.
Just do the book. For God's sake, do the book.
Oh, yeah.
There's rumors that, like, DC is going to have a crossover with Transformers. Is that true, or is that just a rumor?
At this point, it's a rumor. I mean, I don't know if anybody saw the nice Bill Jimenez piece that that he did a couple years back. It was a Transformers JLA sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of fun things we can do with merging a couple of those universes together, but at this point, you know, they're talking stages, no announcement stage.
And you know, Phil is doing work on the Dark Cybertron Transformers crossover starting in November, so that looks awesome.
Last question.
Right, it's a good one. Make it a good one.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, is there a chance for the last edition of the
I'm sorry, you said...
Magic Kelly's year one.
You know, that's something that we've definitely talked about, and hopefully down the line, you know, I know David would like to see it.
Yeah, I'm a lot of these artist edition programs, particularly the large companies, the Marvels and DCs, they roll out slowly, and there's a sort of process behind the scenes that's quite fascinating, but that's one we'd all love to do.
What I love about you guys' passion for these books is that in this last hour we announced a Schultz book, a Gibbons book, a Kirby book, and a Steranko book, and you guys still want more, which is awesome. Thank you for liking these things enough to enable us to have people like Jim and Darwin a part of the company. So,